What does it mean to label a country a currency manipulator? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. After China's currency, the yuan, fell to a key level yesterday, the U.S. officially labeled it a currency manipulator, the first time that's happened in 25 years. Today, China's official Communist Party newspaper said the U.S. was deliberately destroying international order. Jane Foley is a currency strategist at Rabobank.
The Chinese do intervene in the foreign exchange market, but the Chinese authorities intervene to prop their currency up and to try and support growth in China. Now, what that would normally mean, a currency should be weakening. What it has done to allow it to slide below the 7 level is arguably just prop it up a little bit less.
So is it manipulation?
Well, it is manipulation, but it is the manipulation that the US is accusing China of. Well, arguably, no, because if China were to stop intervening in support of its currency, that renminbi would be hugely weaker than it is now, which is clearly not what Donald Trump were to desire.
So normally this formal designation as a currency manipulator would trigger talks between the two sides, but here we've already had talks with no progress. So what's likely to happen now?
A country such as the US could force the IMF to look at China and write a report and make his opinion up. But the IMF already did that earlier this year, and its conclusion was that China didn't really meet the criteria for a manipulator. It's not just all about China and the US. When the renminbi weakens, this can have big effects to all countries that export goods into China. So there's reason to worry that this could be the start of a more broader currency war.
Jane Foley there. Let's do the numbers. Global shares have steadied after seeing their biggest drop in a year and a half yesterday. Germany's DAX is up after orders for high-priced industrial goods rose at the fastest pace since 2017. But Berlin warned that the data are not an indication that Europe's biggest economy is at a turning point from slowing growth and Brexit uncertainty. Now, InterContinental Hotels own more than 800,000 rooms across the planet in chains like Holiday Inn and Crowne Plaza. Revenues rose 12% in the first half of this year. But with an escalating U.S.-China trade war, there are challenges in the company's two biggest markets. Keith Barr is the chief executive.
We're fortunate in that we've been in Greater China for 35 years and have a very large business there, and of course have a huge business in the United States. But it's about long-term GDP growth in the countries and consumer confidence. And so we, like every other business, hope that the two countries will resolve it, because our industry creates 1 in 10 jobs globally.
But that's exactly the concern, isn't it? That the trade war, it isn't getting better. It's actually just getting worse.
What I am concerned about is consumer confidence and then consumer rising wealth, because what's been driving tourism around the world has been this growing middle class. I mean, you look at China as a great example. The middle class there will be 550 million people by 2028. There are 2 times as many domestic trips in China today than in the U.S., and it will be 5 times by 2030. So that trend is an exceptionally tailwind for this hospitality hotel industry. But you want to make sure that growth happens, and that growth is contingent upon GDP growth and rising consumer wealth.
Now, Asia's a key market, but Hong Kong hotel occupancy could plunge by about 40% this month because of the protests.
At the initial demonstrations, we weren't seeing material impact on the hotels. But now the whole market is beginning to see that with the impact of demonstrations and some of the work stoppages, too. And so it will be a challenging trading environment for the foreseeable future. It's a small part of our overall business, since we have 5,600 hotels around the world. But we're going to work with our local teams there to make sure that we provide our guests a great stay and we optimize the performance of the hotels.
Keith Barr. Now, it's been record-breaking heat in many parts of the Northern Hemisphere. One problem with weather is unpredictability, but big data companies like IBM are stepping in to close the gap. The BBC's Nigel Cassidy reports.
Big weather data has become big business.
Weather forecasts shape so many aspects of our lives. Its ripple effect impacts every corner of the economy.
This is a promotional video from the Weather Company. Every morning from a room in Britain's second city, Birmingham, weather fronts flicker across screens as advisors from the company crunch 33 times Twitter's turnover in 24 hours. Leon Brown is chief meteorologist.
When it's very, very hot, people just don't like to have soups. So by knowing that in advance, they can then order that type of food in and make quite a big profit. If they get it wrong, they can make big losses.
But some places on the planet don't have the benefit of using that data.
Cyclone Idai could be the worst weather-related disaster ever to hit the southern hemisphere.
Japan is experiencing a record-breaking heatwave.
The Mexican city of Guadalajara has been hit by a severe hailstorm.
When extreme weather like this strikes on the African subcontinent, people may get little warning. There's a lack of weather stations pumping out publicly available data. Professor John Selker is from the Trans-African Hydrometeorological Observatory, a not-for-profit organisation aiming to see 20,000 stations set up across Africa.
The state of Oregon, which has 4 million people, has more weather stations than the entire African continent. There are literally 4,000 people drowning a year in Lake Victoria due to lack of prediction of large storms. So fishermen go out in their boats unaware that a storm is coming in. There's well north of $1 billion a year in lost value around Lake Victoria alone.
Sharing data across the continent isn't easy, since governments are reluctant to make their local weather data publicly accessible. And all the while, climate change is seemingly making the weather more extreme and changeable. So businesses really can't afford to miss the forecasts. In London, I'm the BBC's Nigel Cassidy for Marketplace.
Finally, Disney earnings are out this afternoon, so here's a fun fact. The man and woman who lent their voices to Mickey and Minnie Mouse were actually a real-life couple who met at the studio. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.